What do you think of when you hear the word Jew? Let's ask some Jews.
We run Hollywood, we control the banks, we're looking to take over the world.
They can be vermin, they can be filthy, they can be super rich.
We're lazy, we work too hard. We're successful, we're too poor. We are arrogant, we're servile.
Philip Green, you know, loathsome.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes. Well, no, I don't know so much about Jeffrey Epstein because he's rather handsome. If I was straight, I would go for Jeffrey Epstein.
Right. I'm just moving on.
It's a Nazi caricature.
Big nose money.
So?
We're a sort of hidden malevolent force.
Whatever you hate, you can pin it on the Jews.
If we controlled things, wouldn't we have better PR?
So why, in a time of extreme sensitivity towards minorities and offence, do these ancient negative stereotypes persist? I'll tell you why. It's because Jews don't count.
What is your ethnic group? Gypsy, Roma, mixed white Asian?
Jews don't count, that is, as a proper minority.
Any other ethnic group?
We don't count in the conversation about racism and discrimination.
The Holocaust isn't about race.
We don't count in the very places where discrimination is being monitored and fought against.
There was a march in 2017 called the Dyke March, lesbian march. Two Jewish women came with a flag they made of a rainbow Star of David, and they were asked to leave.
At my kid's school, which is extremely progressive, Holocaust Remembrance Day is not acknowledged in any way, shape, or form.
I heard about this show at the Brooklyn Museum on Christian Dior. The exhibit's astonishing. Room after room of the most incredible designs. And then, I noticed there's a small section on a wall that says scandals and controversies. And of course, during World War II, he designed clothes for the Nazis. I walk over and I read, and nothing. This was the Brooklyn Museum, known for its social progressiveness.
Do you remember what they did class?
Yeah, the scandal that they mentioned was that he was designing skirts or dresses that went above the knee.
Right.
I was speaking at a college in California. The student governing board had recently basically voted down a resolution against anti-Semitism. The following week, the dormitories are all spray-painted with swastikas. I asked the person hosting me, do you think this graffiti was done by other students or was it done by, you know, people from the town? And she said, oh no, we feel it was students because we found the empty spray paint cans in the recycling bin.
Oh my God, that's the best example ever.
Kill the Jews and save the turtles.
We had to have this talk from an HR company that was all about bullying in the workplace, gender equality, sexual harassment, racism. They're showing a slide and saying, so is that an aggression or a microaggression? Up comes, okay, and here we have a swastika daubed on a Jewish temple. Is that an aggression or a microaggression? Bewildered silence, it's a microaggression. Right. And off we go, and we're away from it. So I'm sitting there thinking, what the fuck? That's so bizarre.
In my own life, I have many examples of this every day on my Twitter feed, like when Channel 4 announced this film.
Comments reading, classic white privilege, and the media conjure anti-Semitism out of thin air.
Or when, in 2017, BBC Radio 4 celebrated New Year's Day with a whole day of Jeremy Irons reading T.S. Eliot's poetry, including these lines.
The rats are underneath the piles. The Jew is underneath the lot.
And there was no big outcry. There were no hashtags. No calls for statues of T.S. Eliot to be pulled down. But the example of Jews not counting that affected me most deeply, and maybe started me on the road to talking about all this in the first place, was this one.
Do you remember when we first started coming here, Ivor? All those years ago.
I do, David. No, I remember being in the shed, standing in the shed, and hearing this... The shed end, hearing this guttural chant, which I just thought, ooh. And I remember joining in with it.
Right.
And then sort of somebody near me, I asked somebody, what are they actually saying? And that's when he said, oh, they're chanting, you know, you know.
There is a weird thing within football, which is that Tottenham Hotspur, because of Stamford Hill and whatever, there's a notion that they are the Jewish club. The vast majority of Spurs fans, of course, are not Jewish. Mm. But as a result, they have, over the years, used this phrase, which we call the Y word, but I think for the case of this chat, we're going to have to use the word Yid. It was around 2008, 2009, that season. At halftime, on that scoreboard there, one of the scores that came up was that Spurs were losing to Hull. The whole crowd, as far as I remember, certainly this whole stand, all start chanting Yiddo, Yiddo. Spurs fans will only use it triumphantly, whereas Chelsea fans using the same word, meaning you're losing to Hull, you're shit. A bloke about five seats back, can you remember?
Yeah, well, he just stood up and at the top of his voice, so the main Yiddo chant
was starting to die down.
Yeah. At the top of his voice, he goes, yeah, fuck the Yids, fuck the Yids.
Fuck the fucking Yids. I distinctly remember him shouting, fuck the Yids, and then fuck the Jews. The word changing
from change.
Yid to Jews, making it absolutely clear. The word Jews is not used straightforwardly to mean Spurs fans. It's no, it,
absolutely.
Yids.
For one of the very first few times in my life, I just cracked and thought, I'm just going to do something, so I'm going to do it. I stood up like this and just pointed at him, sort of, shut up, mate. I was really... And then he shouted back at me and must have gone on for about 10 or 15 seconds, but he did then sit down.
Yeah.
And then I sat down. I was really upset. I wanted to cry.
No, you said, Ivor said, I think I'm going to cry. This is not 1978. This is like 2008, 2009. The programme will say anyone who is heard by stewards or spotted by cameras doing any kind of racist chanting will be ejected for life. So you would have thought that someone shouting, fuck the Jews, over and over again, incredibly aggressively, will at least get asked to stop, but nothing happened.
David and his brother share more memories.
The point is not that there was an anti-Semite at a football match, but that in a culture where all forms of racism are being monitored and called out and held accountable, one form is apparently inaudible. But obviously, this doesn't happen in the higher art forms.
The Royal Court Theatre released a marketing trailer for a new play in which one of the three major characters was going to be an evil billionaire trying to steal other people's rare metals and take over land that didn't belong to him, called Herschel Fink, which, of course, is just a classically Ashkenazi Jewish name.
Appropriation of resources, ideas, land.
And what people will do to make money.
The Royal Court's initial response was to say, none of us knew that Herschel Fink was a Jewish name.
Yeah, this is similar to saying, I've created a character, he's a stupid, drunk terrorist. I'm calling him Seamus O'Hanrahan. What do you mean he's Irish? I had no idea.
Without even thinking about it, of course he's going to be an exploitative capitalist. Of course he's going to, you know, grind down indigenous people and steal things from them. This very negative character had originally been written as a Mexican-American. And it had eventually been decided that this play couldn't have a negative character of Mexican-American heritage. And yet, of course, they were perpetuating a very ancient and deep hatred about Jewish people.
What I actually objected to was their mealy-mouthed statements about what they'd done. Oh, the unconscious bias and the this and the that. No, they'd been racist, they'd been anti-Semitic, and they should have owned it. And just suggest it was bad. Or it was good. We don't like the Jews, you know.
When people talk about anti-Semitism, what they tend to mean is a direct hatred. They mean Nazis or white supremacists describing Jews as vermin or responsible for all the world's evil. But what I've begun with here is a series of examples of something indirect, of absences, of a concern, a protectiveness, a championing, a cry for increased visibility, whatever it might be, not being applied to Jews. And the responsibility for that lies with those who believe in inclusivity.
We are good people who need to associate.
I remember watching this speech in which Dawn Butler appealed to vulnerable and marginalised minorities. She wound up by naming, it seemed, every single one of these minorities. Well.
If you are in social housing, if you are LGBT plus, if you are straight, if you are a...
I was thinking, any minute now.
If you are a hijab, turban, cross, if you are black, white, Asian, if you are disabled, if you
no?
are
No, okay. Soon. She'll say the word soon.
If you are working class, if you are under 18, if you are...
Surely. I mean, this is a lot of people.
If you have ever ticked the other box...
Hi, Dawn.
You have a future, and you are worthy.
Dawn?
And the Labour government will value you!
I'm not saying that Dawn Butler's speech was anti-Semitic, but her list is so long because it is part of the nature of modern identity politics that no vulnerable group should ever be left out. Which makes it all the more telling that she didn't say the words, if you are Jewish. So, there are LGBTQ allies, there are black allies, there are disabled allies, but there doesn't seem to be that many Jewish allies. There's a kind of sacred circle of minorities that the modern progressive left is prepared to go into battle for, and Jews are not in it. Why? There are lots of answers. But the basic one, underpinning all the others, is that Jews are the only objects of racism who are imagined as both low and high status. Jews are stereotyped in all the same ways that other minorities are: lying, thieving, dirty, vile, stinking. But also as moneyed, privileged, powerful, and secretly in control of the world. And if you believe even a little bit that Jews are moneyed, privileged, powerful, and secretly in control of the world, well, you can't put them into the sacred circle of the oppressed. Some might even say they belong in the damned circle of the oppressors.
We Jews believe we are an oppressed minority, and we can cite 2,000 years of historical evidence to support our case. The world in general sees Jews being successful and rich.
The concept that we're all rich is in of itself a racist trope, right? I mean, it's as racist as saying, well, I don't need to worry about racism because, you know, I'm physically strong, or some other stereotype about black people.
I was on the plane yesterday, flying down from Scotland, and just behind me was a very loud American businessman explaining to his traveling companion the everybody knows of the connection between Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Jeffrey Epstein because they were all working for Mossad. You're listening to this thing and you're going, oh, okay, you're starting off on conspiracy theory stuff, and now you've just tipped, and you've gone into a world in which this secret cabal of Jews are bending the world to their will.
The myth that Jews are rich and powerful can lead to the idea that attacking them is what progressives call punching up.
This is a mural that famously proved controversial for ex-Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. It depicts horrible, evil, hook-nosed, bearded men playing Monopoly on the backs of the world's poor. It was objected to by Jews in the area of East London that it went up, because they saw it as being in this tradition, which is a 1930s image from the Nazi newspaper Der Stürmer of Jews salivating over an innocent baby they are about to drain the blood of and drink. The artist, who is called Mir One, did not react well to these objections.
He posted on social media, "Some of the older white Jewish folk in the local community had an issue with me portraying their beloved hashtag Rothschild or hashtag Warburg, etc., as the demons they are."
There's a lot to unpack there. A lot of assumptions about Jews and power. A lot of hashtags, if you want to click on them and follow Mir One down into the darkest parts of the anti-Semitic net. But the key word in that post is white. Because by insisting that Jews are white, you place them outside the sacred circle. You place them above the table, in the seats of the oppressors.
This is despite Jews being classed by the far right for centuries as racially non-white.
Where else could the assumption that Jews are white lead you?
The Holocaust isn't about race.
No.
No, it's not about race. It's about man's inhumanity to man.
For lifelong anti-racism campaigner Whoopi Goldberg, it seems that the word racism is kind of ring-fenced for people of color. Even when discussing history's largest project of racially motivated genocide, on ABC's daytime show, The View.
But you're missing the point. The minute you turn it into race, it goes down this alley. Let's talk about it for what it is. It's how people treat each other.
So, if anti-Semitism, if the killing of 6 million Jews is not racism, as Goldberg is saying, what does she think it is? I assume she thinks it's religious intolerance. A lot of people, it turns out, think this. That's wrong. Anti-Semitism is nothing to do with religion. I am an atheist. That would get me no free passes out of Auschwitz. My great-uncle Arno, who was not an observant Jew, died in the Warsaw Ghetto. And now, white supremacists would not ask me if I kept kosher before they set light to my house.
Jewish thinking and Jewish blood will never again pollute the German nation.
The Nuremberg laws, which my grandparents lived under, that my mum was born under, were racial purity laws. They were about blood. They were about things about yourself that you cannot change, which is why anti-Semitism is racism.
It all really began because I said, how will children, how will...
Meanwhile, here's Whoopi getting the Holocaust wrong again. On Stephen Colbert's show the following day.
I said, this wasn't racial. This was about white on white.
If all that counts in the power stakes is whiteness and Jews are white, what you end up with in your reading of the Holocaust is an equivalence of power. An equivalence of power between a genocidal state machine and a vulnerable ethnic group.
New York, USA.
To explore this dysfunction between progressives and Jews a bit more, I decided to go to the city in the world with the most progressives and the most Jews.
He steps into a bar and meets David Schwimmer.
Hey.
David.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
One of the things about you is, like, I would know that you were Jewish, right?
I would assume that the wide world knows that I'm Jewish. I think I'm mostly or best known for one character, and that character, Ross, is Jewish.
When Whoopi Goldberg went on Stephen Colbert, she said, if a Jewish person and me are standing next to each other and the Klan appear, I'm going to run, he's going to be fine. And I think, like, that's really not true.
The idea that anti-Semitism treatment or behaviors or acts against Jews is not racist, by definition, is bizarre to me, because then the logical conclusion that people would make is that Jews aren't a race.
Whether Jews are a race biologically is irrelevant to me, because over years in history, they've been racialized. The point is, we have had racism imposed on us, and that has to be called racism.
I've never felt white, never. I'm highly aware that I pass as white and I enjoy a lot of the privileges of being a straight, white man, able-bodied. I get it, I understand, and I'm very aware of my privilege. However, 2 years after I was born was Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, the three civil rights workers. So Schwerner, I always grew up thinking about him because of Schwerner Schwimmer, right? I just thought, and he's like a Brooklyn Jew, 24 years old. He and another Jew, Andrew Goodman, went down to Mississippi and worked with James Cheney, a young African American. They were there to try to register black people to vote. They were pulled over by a deputy sheriff and the Klan, who then took them into the woods and executed them. The fact that in my own country, in just a couple of states away, my life, just being Jewish, even though I wasn't religious, my life was at risk. So for me, I never felt white, because for me, white means safe.
Yeah. Friends has got some stick, right, for not having enough diversity in it, right?
The show was supposed to be taking place in New York, in a city that's very diverse,
yeah,
but had no real representation of other minorities,
yeah,
of people of color.
Yeah.
I think the criticism is appropriate, but in terms of the Jewishness, that was something, I think it was only mentioned a couple of times, like the Holiday Armadillo that I played.
Merry Christmas! Ooh! And Happy Hanukkah!
One thing you could say, or one could say, not necessarily you, because it may be difficult for you to say, I could say, is like, yeah, we should have had more diversity in it. We should have had
more
people of color.
There was a minority.
But there was a minority in it, right. And you know what would happen if you said that? It would mean nothing. It would, in fact, more than that, people would get aggressive about it.
You're right, people will just be like, not a real minority.
One word that seems to come up a lot in these conversations is privilege. And one assumption about Jewish privilege is that we can pass as non-Jews, which makes the racism we suffer lesser than some other minorities. It certainly makes it different. I needed to talk about this with someone else, someone closer to me.
So initially, when I did Ancestry, it came up as 50% European Jewish. The other bit of it was mostly Nigerian, different like areas in West Africa. I did also notice on my mom's side, there was a smidgen of, I think it was Scottish.
Okay.
Or something I assume was some, you know, slave master,
yeah,
that raped
probably.
Some,
yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting for me as a biracial person,
yeah,
because there's this feeling of not necessarily belonging in either
right.
community and kind of struggling to feel like there's a place that you do belong.
Right.
I can't hide the fact that I'm black.
Yeah.
You know, my dad can hide the fact that he's Jewish. You know, in America, if my mom gets stopped by the cops in her car, I'm a little more worried than I am if my dad gets stopped in the car by the cops.
So I accept that there's an element of privilege in being able to pass. At the same time, it's kind of complicated as well, because, like, I'm talking about what progressive people think, right? Mm. Right-thinking people. And a progressive person would never say to a gay man, for example, oh, you know, just don't tell people you're gay. Just stay in the closet and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of Jews had to change their names, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in showbiz, but also just in life, you know, just to get jobs early on. And so, what, there's a whole website now dedicated to saying, oh, so-and-so's real name is this Jewish name, as it were, unearthing Jews, right? Because the racists think, yeah, Jews are passing and we need to stop them passing. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm. Oh, my God.
I know.
I can't believe people devote that much time to being hateful. It's free to be nice.
Yeah, it's free to be nice. It's so true. Of course, if Jews can pass as non-Jews, non-Jews can also pass as Jews. And they do, on stage, on film, and TV. But in a modern casting universe where authenticity is everything, should they?
There's this long tradition of non-Jews playing Jews, and not just playing people who happen to be Jewish, but people whose Jewishness is their whole being. One could argue, for instance, that a Gentile playing Joan Rivers correctly, would be doing what is actually called Jew face.
I can't believe we're just meeting.
Well,
it
actually,
feels
okay.
So familiar, like I know you.
But what happened was I wrote a book and you responded to it, right?
Oh my God.
So tell me why. I want to know from your point of view what excited you
about
the book.
I've basically been doing an infomercial on my podcast every week for your
yeah.
book.
I've come here just to say thank you and give you some money.
Ooh, I love money. Ooh, this isn't probably good for that, this documentary.
Yeah.
I read Jews Don't Count, and it just made tangible this, maybe this isn't a good analogy, gas that's in the air. We're the one minority that is like, I feel like we get an eye roll if we stand up for ourselves at all, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what Jewish actresses get to play. You get to play the bitchy or sassy friend, the friend of the main beautiful woman. Or you get to play the cunty girlfriend before the guy realizes what love can be. That's also an option for a Jewish actress. Or you play that guy's book agent.
I knew a guy who was an executive at NBC. And anytime I would be around them in a social environment, I'd always say, if Winona Ryder kept her last name Horowitz, would she have starred in The Age of Innocence and been, you know? And 100% of them say, no way.
So that's really important, I think, because one of the things that gets talked about in response to what I say quite a lot is the notion of Jews passing.
There's a lot of, well, you shouldn't be able to play non-Jews.
Yeah. Like,
but non-Jews get to play Jews all the time. Felicity Jones playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or the woman that plays Maisel, or Margot Martindale, or any of these people that have played iconic Jews.
And Helen Mirren as Golda Meir, Gary Oldman as Herman Mankiewicz, blue-eyed blonde Daniel Craig as a Jewish Nazi resistance fighter in Defiance, and blue-eyed blonde Rutger Hauer as another one in Escape from Sobibor. And most recently, Bradley Cooper playing Leonard Bernstein with a prosthetic nose.
All these women who are not Jewish that are playing Jews and things feel attacked by me or feel guilty about it, and I love all of them. I have no problem with any of them individually, and so I feel awful talking about them because being interested in playing that role and having passion for that role is beautiful, and it's what actors do. It's just the accumulation of never. None of these women playing Jews are Jewish unless the Jew is awful.
Yeah. It's not just that, Sarah, is it? It's also we live in a time where authenticity casting applies to other minorities.
To everyone else.
But if it's not happening for Jews, what does it say about how people view Jews?
I know how they view us. They go, they're fine. Oh, stop. They're fine. They run Hollywood. They're rich. We live in a time where representation is so important and so out front, and that's great, you know, but it's also just, it should also count for Jews.
Meanwhile, some of you, certainly the ones who populate my online life, will be saying, yeah, yeah, Badil, banging on about bloody Jews again, but this you.
So this is me, as the Nottingham Forest footballer Jason Lee, in a sketch from the 90s show Fantasy Football League. I understand this now to be part of a very bad racist tradition and have apologised for it many times publicly, and I will take the opportunity now to apologise again for it. I am sorry. What apologising for it seems to make no difference to is the recurring presence of that photo on my Twitter timeline, particularly since I started speaking out publicly about anti-Semitism. So I'm now going to do something which on the internet is called whataboutery. But the thing is, in the case of this film, it's impossible to talk about how people react to anti-Jewish racism without comparing it to how they react to other racisms. This film is about how it's different for Jews. So let's talk about Beau Selector.
Call me Jew. Why don't you call me Jew? They like it when you call me Jew. Jew?
Beau
first elector was Lee Francis's very funny Channel 4 sketch show broadcast in the early 2000s, in which Francis dressed up as various celebrities in grotesque cartoon masks. He portrayed me as a Hasidic Jew with a massive nose and curly ringlets who gets big laughs for saying the word
Jew.
I don't think this is unfunny, or even in a comically exaggerated way, inaccurate. But I do think, given that Francis is not Jewish, that it is racist. And there's been a remarkable lack of outrage about this. I've seen no calls for him to apologize about it, like he did in an internet post in 2020 to various people of color who he'd impersonated.
You know, I just want to say sorry for any upset I caused, whether I was Michael Jackson, Craig David, Trisha Goddard, all people that I'm a big fan of.
This is not an attempt to excuse me dressing up as Jason Lee, which was racist. It's an attempt, like everything else here, to note the difference in the reaction and to ask why. So, progressives, some progressives, downgrade anti-Semitism compared to other forms of discrimination due to an association of Jews with power. But actually, Jewish history is an incredibly long catalogue of disempowerment. And I'm not just talking, and this is one of the issues because many people think it is just this, about the Holocaust.
It's almost a public ritual in the United States where some public figure says some vaguely anti-Semitic thing and then, like, they get dragged to a Holocaust museum and then they have to make some statement where they're like, Nazis are bad. But the problem is, like, there's people who feel that anti-Semitism consists of murdering 6 million Jews. And anything short of that is kind of no big deal.
People just don't understand what Jews are or who they are or our history of enslavement and persecution and forced exile, yeah. Culminating in the Holocaust, which is the thing that people are now tired of. You know, they roll their eyes, oh, the Holocaust. Okay, you play the Holocaust card.
Whenever you find a Jew in the world now, they will have been expelled from some country in living memory, in their family's living memory.
We have a long, long history of being kicked out. In this country, don't forget, this was the first country to kick Jews out, apart from Israel, a longer time ago. We're frightened that if they discover we're Jews, they'll get rid of us. We're always a little bit frightened that we're going to be kicked out again.
I think this is something actually that a lot of people really don't understand, which is how frightened Jews remain. My mother, not my great-great-grandmother, my mother was born in Nazi Germany. She only just got out, and most of her family was murdered. The inheritance of the trauma from parents and grandparents, it's not really the past. It lives on in your bones.
Are your children... How Jewish are they?
They're half Jewish.
Yeah, my children are as well. I've talked to my children about, well, your life would be shit if in Nazi Germany, but you might not be killed. I've had that conversation.
Yeah, had that conversation. Because it seems very... It seems real. And it's also that thing where, okay, my youngest daughter, she looks more Jewish than any other member of my family. She just looks magnificently Jewish. She'd be, you know, she'd be one for the camps.
Yeah.
They'd take her.
But what about Israel? Isn't Israel actually an oppressor? Well, I think there are many things to say about anti-Semitism. A racism that goes back centuries, since well before the establishment of the State of Israel, but in progressive circles, almost everything anyone does say about anti-Semitism or about Jewish identity and inclusion is met with the question, what about Israel?
To prove your value if you're Jewish, you first have to make a statement of recantation of everything that Israel stands for. I'm not a citizen of Israel. Do I have to tell you how upset I am that the Palestinians are treated so abominably and how much I dislike West Bank settlements? I don't expect my Gentile fellow Brits to apologize for Putin because he's Caucasian.
And now Zionism is racism. It's just like people who believe that there could be a Jewish state, safe place for Jews to go. There are Muslim states, no one has a problem with it at all.
However, the Israeli government sorts itself out or doesn't sort itself out, the country was always going to be, at the very last, hated, and hated in the language that people used about Jews 2,000 years ago.
No one is suggesting that the state of Israel hasn't done many bad things, but British Jews are not responsible for those actions, and expecting that they should feel so is racist. Some Jews, of course, do feel responsible.
So one of the things about you is you talk about being Jewish quite a lot.
I do, yes.
Yeah, and it's a quite a core part of your identity.
I think it's central. Yeah. Absolutely. It may be all my identity. That may be all I have to offer.
But younger Jews, who are often quite left-wing, they have written to me and said, OK, I've read your book, and what it's telling me is that I need to be able to be not embarrassed about saying I see anti-Semitism.
We have to say the word Israel. Israel is at the root of all this. Israel is the problem.
OK, so I disagree with that, because anti-Semitism has roots that go back centuries and centuries and centuries.
No, I agree with you. I would say that anti-Semitism is naturally English, but after the war, you couldn't express it. It was buried. Israel opened Pandora's box and allowed what had been festering and simmering to come out.
I feel no connection with Israel. And so, therefore, for me, when people use Israel as a stick to beat Jews with, British Jews with, or to say, as they do, if I say something about anti-Semitism on Twitter, someone will say, what about Palestine? That is anti-Semitic, because we have no collective responsibility as Jews for Israel.
I don't agree with you about that, because if you know that bad things are being done by people to whom you are connected, strongly connected, it is your duty to speak about it, to draw attention to it, and to try to change it.
In what way am I connected, really, to Israel, a country that feels pretty foreign to me? I'm an atheist. I am a...
As am I.
I'm a European Jew. I basically just think Israel schmizrael. I'm not that bothered with Israel. It seems to me racist that as a Jew I have to be more bothered about it, because that is not a stricture imposed on any other minority.
I think it's willful of you to deny connection with...
It's not willful. I genuinely feel it.
Because they are your people. They are my people.
No left-wing person would say to a Muslim who's trying to speak about, say, Islamophobia, what about Saudi Arabia? What about human rights in Saudi Arabia? No progressive person would ever say that. So why should we accept that as Jews?
Well, they should. And I would defend my feeling because I feel connected to Israel.
People are very worried all the time. This might offend black people, this might offend gay people, this might offend disabled people.
But they don't care whether it offends Jews.
That's correct.
I agree with you. They don't. Because they don't like Jews. They don't give a flying fart about it. They don't like them. We're not liked.
Well, I don't think any left-wing person would say that up front. I think right-wing people would say that up front. Far-right people would definitely
say... Well, left-wing people have got to learn to tell the truth, then.
Where does it end up, though? All these assumptions about Jews and Zionist conspiracies and power. What are the real-world consequences?
I'm bombed up. I've got ammunition. I've only been here 2 weeks. I've got them at gunpoint. Jews don't count. Manhattan, New York.
I've come to New York so many times, I've never set foot in this neighborhood before.
That's bad.
Well, I'm glad you're finally getting to see it. It's a treasure of the city, and it's been here since 1872.
It's so beautiful.
A cool recording. I'm surrounded. I'm in a synagogue. I've got four Jewish guys with me, right?
You were, in a very weird way, really, placed at the center of a hostage crisis in Texas.
I received a phone call from a rabbi who I did not at that point know, and he said, there's a gunman here. He wants to speak to you. Can you please call us back? This is not a joke.
I've got them all at gunpoint.
put it on speakerphone and spoke first with the rabbi, who then quickly passed the phone to the gunman. He had a single demand of me, which was that I was supposed to release a federal prisoner who he called his sister from a federal prison 20 minutes away from that synagogue, that I had an hour to deliver her to the synagogue, and then no one would have to get hurt.
How did you feel?
I mean, I just could barely breathe during that whole entire day. Why did he do this? Why did he pick Central, me?
I wonder if he just thought, this is a big synagogue, it's in New York, which is the sort of hub of, in his mind, no doubt, Jewish power.
They let James Foley die, and they didn't need to. But maybe they'll have compassion for Jews.
At one point, I even said to him, I don't think I have as much power as you think. And he said, all Jews have power. He said, you have influence and connections, and you run a very important synagogue. Just make a few phone calls and get this done.
Angela continued to engage with the hostage taker, Malika Crum from Blackburn, over an 11-hour siege. Finally, three of the hostages staged an escape. A Crumb came into view and was shot dead.
Among the many things that were very upsetting and alarming about the situation was the fact that in the immediate aftermath, it was called not an anti-Semitic attack.
We do believe from our engagement with this subject that he was singularly focused on one issue, and it was not specifically related to the Jewish community.
That's so extraordinary.
Yeah, go back and look at it. It's crazy.
That's so extraordinary, and it seems to me that people are very loath. People, whatever it might be, the culture is very loath to give Jews, when they are victimized, the space that they might give to other minorities in terms of that victimization.
But he picked a synagogue specifically because he believed that Jews had specific power, influence, connections to get what he wanted done. So it is clearly anti-Semitism that drives that selection of that particular synagogue.
If it had been a far right gunman who had entered a mosque and was holding Muslims hostage, without doubt that would be an Islamophobic incident, and that would be the centre of it. It comes to the heart of my thesis, really, which is about the failure to see Jews as a real minority and there being a sort of sense in which Jews are essentially just white people.
This trope that Jews are connected, influential, powerful, you know, control the president and everyone on down from there. I think that people don't always see that as a dangerous anti-Semitic trope.
No.
And that Colleyville incident is an example of exactly how dangerous it can be.
This reluctance to accept anti-Semitism as a motivation for extremists was seen again 6 months later at a shooting in Highland Park, Chicago, a Jewish area where three Jews were killed and anti-Semitic flyers had been posted. But it was not generally described in the press as anti-Jewish hate crime. It's like people can't see Jews as being a vulnerable community, despite reported anti-Semitic incidents being at a record high.
We make up, I think, 2% of the population of the United States, and yet the recent report of religious attacks of all groups, Jews were made up 60% of attacks. And it's rising globally, as we both know.
But what does this mean for the everyday life of Jews? What is it like to live with this threat?
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. I'm David. I'm just going to read you this little bit, OK? So remember, he's a boy, but this magical thing has happened to him. Malcolm sat up out of the mud. Well, his bottom half was still very much in the mud, but his face was out of it at least. Hmm, said Ludwig. I don't remember this one at all, especially not the blue eyes. Does he have a name? Excuse me, said Malcolm. Yes, said Ludwig. Am I a pig? He said. Ludwig took a deep breath and said grandly, Fatty Bum Bum. All hail Fatty Bum Bum, said Mabel. Say it loud and say it proud, Fatty Bum Bum. Please don't call me that, said Malcolm. It's a lovely name.
The schoolchildren burst into laughter at David's story. Then the fire alarm goes off.
What's happening now is a security drill. They practice this all the time at this school. We're not allowed to show you what they're doing in there,
The kids will be doing things to protect themselves from the possibility that this school is being attacked by an intruder. Recently, there's been a lot of gun crime, terrible gun crime, in America. And I happen to have seen online pictures of children doing security drills, protecting themselves from the possibility of gunmen in America. And I've seen people saying, isn't it good that because we do have gun control in this country, that children in schools in the UK don't have to do this kind of drill, but they do. Every Jewish school in the UK has to practice security drills like this one, because every Jewish school in the UK is under threat. And I'll tell you something, when I came to this school, we didn't do this kind of drill. About 6 years ago, I came back to this school, like I just did now, to read some of my books to children, and they showed me this. They showed me that this is what 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds have to do. And it broke my heart. But meanwhile, I know, despite all I'm saying, but the angry tweeters out there will still be shouting, what about Jason Lee? It doesn't matter that Bo Selector did you in Jewface. Blackface is worse. This film is to some extent a discussion of why people might think that. But as a person, what I think is, two wrongs don't make a right. Only one thing can make something like that right.
David now walks into Jason Lee's West London podcast studio.
Jason.
David.
Great to meet you.
Take a seat.
So, before we say anything else, I've come here to say I'm sorry, Jason. I'm sorry for the sketches that we did on Fantasy Football, me and Frank Skinner in the 1990s, that you were on the end of. I'm sorry for wearing a costume and makeup that was racist. I've said I'm sorry in print, I've said I'm sorry on TV, but there's something missing, which is what we lost sight of in those sketches was the human being at the other end of those sketches, which is you.
Yeah, I think it was important for people listening, watching this for the first time, to realise that we've never spoken.
We've never spoken.
I mean, my first question would be, you know, why has it taken 25 years for you to reach out, really, and have this conversation, you know, man to man?
Yeah, well, that's my bad as well. So I'm sorry for it having taken so long. I mean, to explain it, there's shame. There's awkwardness, there's fear, but it took a while for me to understand, I think, how much we fucked up. And I think also stuff happened to me since then that made me understand how you must have felt. As I became more well-known, and particularly as I put my Jewish identity a bit more front foot, suddenly I was getting racist abuse.
Yeah.
I hated it, and it did start to shift in me at that point, like, of course, this is how Jason Lee must have felt, right?
I mean, as much as I hold you accountable for it, because you was the person that obviously costumed up, I still hold so many more people accountable. Was it BBC Two at the time? Mm. You know, people you was working with. Was there anybody at any stage that said, hold on a minute, maybe you're going a little bit too far here?
Not at that point. No.
Because it was successful.
And because, you know, within the culture of the time, which again, people use it as an excuse. I'm not using it as an excuse. I'm just trying to answer your question. There was an acceptability at that point in time to that kind of comedy, and it's not acceptable.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that now. You know, I think if that would have come out maybe earlier, people might have understood. But this is, as I said, I could deal with whatever was thrown my way. It didn't mean I should have to deal with it.
No.
You know, I've got family and friends who live in Stoke Newington, a large Jewish community. There's a real strong connection between the black community and the Jewish community in that area. These are communities coming together, supporting each other, who can probably identify with the struggles. You mentioned in your book about allyship. I mean, I would say to you straight away that I would be an ally. I agree with you 100% that using the Y word in a stadium. And for me, you know, in terms of what football can do, and Tottenham particularly,
yeah,
I think it would be helpful if they took the lead, you know,
yeah,
because it's their club that identifies with that word. My focus is, you know, on players, you know?
Yeah.
If players was to bring it to our attention, and if a Jewish player was to say, look, I'm being discriminated against, 100% that person would get the same support as any other minority group.
This is allyship. You saying that,
yeah.
You as a black person saying this anti-Semitism should be challenged in a big way, that is allyship.
Yeah,
and I am grateful for it.
No, 100%.
You know, just to say once again, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to come and talk to you. I'm going to say sorry again. I am, on a human level, very grateful.
No, I appreciate that. And, you know, thank you for taking time. I know it's been a difficult conversation, it had to be had. You know, we can look forward to change and maybe we can look for that win together.
Yeah.
I'm Jason Lee. This is the Absolute Lee Podcast. Thank you very much.
The Jews Don't Count phenomenon is getting better.
I think the dial is shifting slightly. 12 years after my brother and I were abused at a football match, Tottenham Hotspur FC on their website stated that they believe it is time to move on from associating this term with our club. My own club, Chelsea, where the abuse originally happened, have also been active in this area and have launched a Say No to Anti-Semitism campaign. The Royal Court Theatre, meanwhile, have admitted that the naming of an unscrupulous billionaire character, Herschel Fink, in a play
fell short of the Royal Court's high ambitions in terms of inclusivity and racism. And they've apologised and now commissioned a production called Jews in Their Own Words.
So maybe things will continue to change. But it's not going to be like other forms of change in racial justice. This is not going to happen in an explosive mass movement way. Like many things with Jews, if it happens at all, it will have to be quietly, uncertainly, and with many qualifications.
For the sake of our grandparents and their families, who really did suffer from the worst possible excesses of anti-Semitism, we have to keep saying what you're saying. It is right to say, no, I'm not just an example of a perfectly ordinary white person, privileged and maybe even with extra special powers, but I'm an individual like other Jews who has noticed that for some reason our pain isn't a real pain, that Shylock was wrong. If you prick us, do we not bleed? You don't believe that, it seems.
For some reason, we're an unprotected species. And I've never understood that, given what happened and what continues to happen.
We're right behind all of you. Who's marching for us? And the answer is no fuck-up.
I've been spending a lot of time on this documentary, kind of in the mindset of the anti-Semites, because my whole point is that anti-Semites still have this very, very fixed and bad idea, an evil idea of Jews that maybe progressive people aren't really kind of that concerned about. And here's the thing, right? Just being here, you realize that Jews are not, in fact, these menacing, sinister giants who subhumanly control the world with their evil claws. They're ordinary men and women trying to get on with their lives. Crazy, eccentric, bustling around thinking about pickles, fighting and shouting at each other, mainly about food.
Okay, Rabbi, I'll give it to you.
You know what? If these people control the world is fucked.
And now I'm off to check my social media, where I look forward to a number of warm, friendly, and understanding responses. Shalom.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I don't remember, but it was so good.
Jews are pleased when, like, they see someone who's, like, really talented, like, on a big TV show.
Handsome.
Yep. What else do you want me to say? Charismatic. All that
humble,
stuff.
And
think he's a Jew. That's great. I'm pleased about that.
How Jewish are you?
I'm a big Jew. I'm a huge Jew.
What everybody will say is, that beard really makes you look like really, really like rabbinic. Really like, I don't know, like ancient wisdom, money lending, something. What is it?
Yeah,
you and look nobody will ever say, you look like a big fat Jew.
Okay, you look like a big fat Jew.
Yeah.
That's done. So
when you're Jewish, it's something that springs out of you. It pushes out of you. It's like kind of cultural vomit. It just comes out.
I think that's true.
I hope you're okay to tell a story about Princess Margaret. Discovering the Jew. Would you mind telling that story? Because I do think it's funny.
And they said, what about your mother's people?
Right.
I said, oh, they're Jewish, Middle European Jewish. Oh, you're a Jew! She said, I didn't know you were a Jew. He's a Jew! He's a Jew! And the word's like skewer. Wow. Just, and she meant no harm by it, I suppose.
Well,
Jew!
Even as a thought experiment, let's just say being Jewish is a real minority and we're going to talk about it like other minorities talk about their experience.
Yeah.
And then you don't think, yeah, but will people think we're cumps?
But 90... I mean, you are.